here's a picture of not where we went to, but the beach. Sweet. Dave, could you cue the first sound clip for about 10 seconds? I think that's about 10 seconds. Now, let's get some participation involved there. So tell me, you know, what comes to mind when you hear that?
Summer.
Beach. Holidays. Sleep. So pretty good stuff, eh? So that's awesome. All right, now get ready for the next clip. Could you cue that for about 10 seconds? Enough. So tell me, like, what comes to mind now? Like, how do you guys feel?
Children are coming.
Anything else? Shark music. Jaws, yeah. You know, but when we actually describe that feeling, you know, some of us might have just felt a little bit heavier, where like something gripped us, something just paralyzed for that little moment. You know, in life, we've all had those moments, situation, experiences where we've actually felt this way. That unpleasant feeling, you know, caused by the threat of danger, harm, or pain by someone or something, you know, we've felt that before. This is fear. You know, in life, we've all experienced fear. We're in moments, you know, we've sensed this threat of danger. We've detected, you know, the threat of pain, and in spaces and places, we've identified the threat of harm. And it just kind of crawls up on us, and it grips us, and sometimes it paralyzes us. This is fear. And all of us, I believe, we've all experienced fear, one form or another form. What is interesting, about 2 weeks ago, you know, I was gripped with fear, like what Monique was talking about. I'm about to go on surgery on Wednesday. And what happened was I found a giant lump underneath my armpit. And I was like, oh, get that checked out. And I found out that it was actually two giant lumps. So I went to the doctor. Doctor did some tests, and straight away he sent me to a surgeon, to have a look at it again. And what struck me first was I was like, oh, it shouldn't be that dangerous. But I was walking, and then to the place that we got to, it said Breast Association. And I was like, oh my goodness, am I in the right place? So that's when fear hit me right there. But also, just learning that these lymph nodes, that it could be potentially dangerous, that struck a bit of fear in me. And all of us, you know, we've had experiences like this where fear has just kind of just struck us. And what is interesting, the science behind fear, is that in the middle of our brains, we have this thing called the amygdala. Can everyone say amygdala? I had to practice that on Google to pronounce it. Well, in short, the amygdala, it is a mechanism that in our brain that clicks on and off. And it clicks on and off whenever our deepest human need to survive needs to be put on. So this is what it does. It triggers whenever we feel or sense fear. And the amygdala, you know, activates this thing called our fight or flight responses. And simply, these are the things that we need to do to survive this presenting situation of danger or harm. So basically, you know, fear, it is a real thing. It is actually part of our biological and physiological makeup as human beings. You guys got that? The amygdala is a mechanism that responds so we can survive. You know, it's part of us as humans. So as humans, we're always going to feel fear or sense fear when things are unsafe. So now let's enter into the story of Acts 23. Here in the story, you know, we see Paul is at the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin is a place where it held the final authority on Jewish law, and it is led by the high priest and 70 members from a mixture of backgrounds such as chief priests, scribes, elders, or sages. And these members, you know, they've got the power to put people to death. Such as Paul, as we track back to Acts chapter 8, Paul puts this guy called Stephen the first Christian martyr, to death. So as we enter in the story, you know, Paul's life, it is in the threat of danger, pain, and harm. I mean, this crowd is out to get Paul. They want to kill Paul. And Paul is experiencing fear in this moment. And as we read on to the story, which we'll do soon, Paul's amygdala is activating his fight or flight mode to survive. And he starts his defense to survive in Acts 23, verses 1, which goes, Paul looked straight at the Sanhedrin and said, "My brothers, I have fulfilled my duty to God in all good conscience to this day." At this, the high priest Ananias ordered those standing near Paul to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, "God will strike you, you whitewashed wall. You sit there to judge me according to the law, yet you yourself violate the law by commanding that I be struck." You know, we see Paul speaking out of fear, and he's activating his fight mode to survive. And as we read on, you know, Paul is continuing to fight for survival. Those standing around Paul said, "How dare you insult God's high priest?" Paul replied, "Brothers, I did not realize that he was the high priest, for it is written, 'Do not speak evil about the ruler of your people.'" Then Paul, knowing some of them were Sadducees and the others Pharisees, called out in the Sanhedrin, "My brothers, I am a Pharisee, descended from Pharisees. I stand on trial because of the hope of the resurrection of the dead." When he said this, a dispute broke out between the Pharisees and Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. The Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, and that there are neither angels nor spirits, but the Pharisees believe all these things. There was a great uproar, and some of the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, stood up and argued vigorously. "We find nothing wrong with this man," they said. "What if a spirit or an angel had spoken to him?" And as we can see in the situation, Paul's latest move to fight for survival is to stir up conflict amongst the Sanhedrin. The dispute became so violent that the commander was afraid that Paul would be torn to pieces by them. He ordered the troops to go down and take him away from them by force and bring him into the barracks. The following night, the Lord stood near Paul and said, "Take courage. As you have testified about me in Jerusalem, you must also testify in Rome." So this is the story of Acts 23, the beginning of it. You know, in this story, we see Paul experiencing fear as he's in the threat of being killed. He is unsafe. And in this moment, Paul is fighting for his survival. Another biblical hero of ours is Moses. You know, we love Moses. We write stories about him, do things with him, teach him at Sunday schools. And as we learned, you know, earlier on in Moses' life, he watches an Egyptian man beat a Hebrew man. So what he did when no one was watching is that he killed the Egyptian man. When Pharaoh heard about this, he wanted to kill Moses. So fear just strikes and strikes shivers down Moses' spine. So Moses flees away from Egypt for his survival. I believe that most, if not all of our biblical heroes have experienced fear in their lives. You know, earlier we explored that fear is part of our biological makeup as human beings. Fear is part of our human condition. It's a natural response when our lives are threatened or our identity is challenged. You know, fear is a genuine thing and it's part of being human. But sometimes fear has a power to influence our actions, thoughts, decisions, and choices and changes we make to survive and to keep safe. You know, we see in the story of Acts 23 that fear is influencing Paul to fight and cause conflict to survive another day. And as we look through Moses' story, you know, we see in Moses' story when God actually asks him to set his people free under Pharaoh, where in that time Egypt was the most dangerous place in the world where human beings, especially the Hebrews, were being abused by power. You know, fear influences Moses to ask God, "Can you send someone else instead?" for his survival. And also fear, it can influence our everyday lives and dictate them, from the places we choose to live and to go, to the people we do life with, or the friends we have, or even the people we want to approach, the jobs that we want to work, the schools we want to send our kids to. And if we're honest with ourselves, you know, we've probably all made choices being influenced or dictated by fear. You know, fear is part of the human condition. But what is interesting is that science says that our amygdala can actually be trained in the way that when we feel fear, our fight or flight responses do not have to influence us. So that we can feel fear, we can acknowledge it, we can feel it, and choose not to be influenced by fear. That's pretty interesting, eh? So this is what we're going to be looking at today. Feeling fear, but choosing not to be influenced by fear. And I believe this is a challenge that we need to rise to, because I believe that fear can actually significantly stunt the movement of the kingdom. Last week, Mick talked about stored Christians, and maybe fear could be something that stores us as Christians. Going back to the moments where fear strikes our biblical heroes, you know, when Moses runs away from Egypt to survive and God asks him to become a leader, to go back to Egypt to set his people free. You know, at this point, you know, Moses has no idea what this looks like. But what he does know is that the Pharaoh is putting his people through hell and God wants him to go back to where he escaped from. And going back to Paul, you know, he's been fighting for a survival and Jesus stood near Paul and tells him to testify in Rome. And at the same point, you know, Paul doesn't know what this is going to look like. He has no idea. But what he does know is that when Jesus got handed over by the Sanhedrin to the Romans, Jesus was crucified. There's that saying, better the devil you know than the devil you don't. Meaning that fear keeps us from stepping beyond the safe, the familiar, the known, because this is what we've done to survive in the past. And that fear has this influence to stop us stepping into the realm of uncertainty, into the mystery, and into the different. Because simply, we don't know what happens there. We don't know what this is going to look like. And at that moment, when our biblical heroes were struck by fear, you know, stepping out is hard because they don't know what this looks like. I mean, we know the ending of the stories of Moses and Paul. But at those moments, at those very moments, they didn't. At that moment, Moses didn't know that he would lead his people, set his people free and lead them into the promised land. At that moment, Paul didn't know that he would write more letters, which would be part of the New Testament, which is going to influence Christians for 2,000 years and still going to influence Christians in the future. No, they didn't know that at that point, at that very point. I think sometimes fear influences us to go back to the safe, the known, and the familiar things we've done to survive. And actually, sometimes as followers of Jesus, when we do this, I believe this stunts the movement of the kingdom. And Jesus says, you know, you are the light of the world. I think fear stops us from being the light of the world. Because the light, it is a mystery. It is unknown. It is different. I believe fear stops us from becoming the people God calls us to be simply because we don't really know what this looks like. It is unknown. Nelson Mandela said this really awesome quote. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. You playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We are born to manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it is in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. You know, this is our deepest fear. You know, Jesus calls us to be the light of the world. That this person God calls us to be is actually beyond our powerful beyond measure. And I think our deepest fear is actually we have no idea what this looks like. And the truth is, you know, being the light of the world, it is a mystery, it is unknown, it is different. And I've followed Jesus for 8 years. I still don't know what the next step looks like. And I believe deep down, you know, sometimes we're afraid of being the light and what we can become. But also, I think sometimes we're afraid of what the world can become when the kingdom actually reigns. You know, like, what does the light of the world look like? What does it look like when the kingdom is fully present here? I define faith as choosing to take a flying leap. A flying leap into the unknown, the unfamiliar, the mystery. And I think sometimes our deepest fear is actually taking that flying leap into the mystery to become the person God calls us to be. And I believe that fear can actually stop us from taking this flying leap. And I believe that if we let fear stop us, our world could remain in darkness. I mean, let's look back at Moses and Paul's stories. If they didn't take their flying leaps, would we be here today? And I guess the next bit we're going to explore is, you know, what helped Moses and Paul, who experienced genuine fear, you know, real fear, and they took flying leaps to become the people to bring light to this world. Let's learn from them so we can also take, so as we experience fear, we can also take flying leaps. So I guess the first point goes like this. Moses' story in Exodus 3, you know, Moses is trying to back out, and he goes, "Who am I that I should go to the Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God makes a promise to Moses, "I will be with you." In Acts 23, verse 11, you know, Jesus stands near Paul in the place that he has held him. And also in the Great Commission, you know, at the end, Jesus says, "Surely I am with you always to the very end of time." You know, this is a promise that God makes, that he is with us. He is with you. You know, fear is still fear. You know, we will always wonder what happens when we take that flying leap to become the light of the world. But I guess the real question is, will fear become the God who controls our destiny? Or will the promise of God's presence be our comfort and strength? You know, as we take the flying leap and embrace the unknown and unfamiliar, in my experience when I've done this, is that you catch God's bigger vision for your life and for his people. And as I took the flying leaps in my faith, I saw the power of God, and so did Moses, and so did Paul. But as I took this flying leap, was there pain and still the threat of danger and harm? Yep. Sure was. Did my life become more complex and difficult? Yep, sure did. Did I wonder what was going to happen next? And yes, I still do wonder. As we know, so did all of our biblical heroes who were fearful as they took their flying leap and brought light into the world. Their lives didn't get easier. There was still a lot of danger. And there was times where they wondered what was going to happen next. But as I took my leap and followed Jesus, I watched him change lives and change mine as well. And somehow this always translated to me that I knew that he is with me. And I realized that he's present as close as my breath. You know, God is with us when we're struck with fear, but God is also with us when we take that leap to become the light. The second one. You know, God actually believes that we can become the people he calls us to be. You know, God believes that we can become the people he calls us to be. You know, God chooses people who are fearful like Moses and Paul. But God also chooses people where fear cripples us and grips us like you and I. He chooses us and he believes us that we can actually bring his kingdom to earth, that we are the light of the world. And this is because God believes that we have that capacity to overcome fear, a natural thing, that influence us to become the people, an unnatural thing, who takes flying leaps to bring light into this world. You know, God believes that Moses, a stuttering man who ran away, could free his people. God believes that Moses, an overzealous Jew who loves to stir the pot, could influence and minister to his people. You know, there are days where I walk past homeless people, and when they ask for money, fear strikes me. But Jesus believes that I can be the light of the world because he says, "You are the light of the world." That I am capable to step into the unfamiliar to acknowledge his humanity. So I smile and ask for his name and how his day is. Or when I'm in conversation with another peer in youth work, you know, we start talking about our young people and they start going, "Man, you work with the hardest bunch of the kids in Manurewa. Like, you work with the roughest, the most at risk. You know, they've got poor backgrounds. And it just seems to me they've got no future." You know, fear strikes me in that conversation because I'm like, how do I respond? But Jesus believes that I can be the light of the world because he says, "You are the light of the world." That I am capable to step into uncertainty of this conversation to give a voice when people are being discriminated. So I stand up to her and I say, "They actually teach me a lot about being human." You know, Jesus believes you are the light of the world. He says that. When he says that, it gives me this internal thing that I am actually capable to do it. And you know what's beautiful is that when Jesus actually leaves this earth, he tells us to make the disciples and to change the world. And I think that's a beautiful thing. This is how much he believes in us. And what I've learned in my time is in following Jesus is that smiling, you know, it's not a lot, but it could be a scary thing to do. Smiling can actually change lives, because I can tell, because people, they smile back. And this shows, you know, what it's like to be the light of the world. And personally, I had to work on my smile for years, and I still think I got a crap smile. So Jesus believes in you. That's the second thing. He says you are the light of the world. You can change the world, especially in everyday moments, which change someone else's world, if you get that, I think. But the last one, the last point, goes like this. Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane. And Jesus goes, "If it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." And these words are quite powerful because they reveal a depth of fear and anguish Jesus feels. You know, Jesus didn't want to take the brutality of the cross, and he prays to God honestly. He did not try to hide his fear. He did not try to deny it or repress it, but he acknowledges his fear. And Jesus puts it all on the table, believing that God could actually handle this honest prayer. But he didn't just end with prayer. You know, Jesus spoke honestly with his closest friends. You know, he was vulnerable to them, and he showed weakness, that it was okay to do so. And right here, it's a beautiful image that Jesus shows that fear, you know, it is part of the human condition. You know, our God experienced fear on this earth. And here, Jesus also shows that fear doesn't have to control or dominate our decisions. You know, Jesus was honest, and somehow this honesty prepared him for what's to come. And what, in my experience, what I've found is that when I'm honest with my fears with God and also the people that I journey with, what I have discovered is that as I'm pouring out my heart, somehow this gives me courage. Because being honest requires courage. And this, or maybe somehow, you know, I know that my peers and my God are listening to me. And this shows that, you know, they're actually taking the time to listen to me, that they care about me. And them knowing that they care for me, this gives me courage. And this actually prepares me for what is to come. So I guess, you know, the last point, you know, being honest with God and others, somehow this gives us courage for what is to come. So fear, it is part of our human condition. You know, everyone experiences fear. Moses, Paul, and even Jesus. Yes, we will always experience fear in our lives. And this is going to sound really weird, but I'm learning that fear is actually my friend. It is actually an indicator. Fear tells me what I shouldn't do, but more often this translates into exactly what I should do in this moment. And every day, don't get me wrong, like, fear grips me. Like, I feel it all the time. But the times when I choose to take flying leaps to be the light of the world, to be the hands and feet of Jesus, when I do this, when I take that leap, it is literally the best thing, the most enjoyable thing that I've ever done in this life. You know, I choose to take flying leaps while being struck with fear, because the truth is, you know, our neighborhood, our world needs Jesus and his kingdom. So I guess, you know, all of us, you know, we're left with a choice to make. You know, we're always going to feel fear. It's always going to paralyze us and grip us. I guess the question is, are we going to let fear influence us, or do we choose to take flying leaps? Do we choose to become the light of the world, the church, the disciples Jesus calls us to be? And every day, the choices, the times that I let fear hit me and I choose to do nothing. The cool thing is that our God keeps on giving endless opportunities every day to step out to be the light, to change the history of the world like Moses and Paul did, or just to simply change the world of one person. And the cool thing is that as I'm doing this, you know, I know that God is with me, you know, and that he believes that I can do it. And sometimes I need to borrow courage from God by speaking, you know, honestly, and also speaking honestly with my friends. Like, I literally have to borrow courage from them. So, I guess to finish up, eh? So, may we be known as fearful Christians, Christians who are full of fear. But at the same time, may we be known as fearful Christians who take flying leaps for the kingdom, for God. And yes, it would be the scariest thing to ever happen, but it might just also be the best. So let's pray. Dear Lord, I just thank you that you walked on this earth as a human, that you experienced fear and you overcame fear. You took a flying leap to give us everlasting, eternal life. Lord, may we be your people who experience fear. May we be fearful people. And may we, you know, take flying leaps to bring to this earth and the people you love everlasting life. And everybody said,